2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, my co-host, Dylan White. I'm back from my week of vacation, so it's been like every other week with this podcast the last couple weeks. Apologies about that. We'll be back to normally scheduled pods all throughout the offseason. We're already planning out our top 500 update and all the position rankings and prospect rankings and all that good stuff that we do in the offseason. It's always kind of fun when, like, the, you know, the game of musical chairs stops and like the numbers stop and you can kind of just take a step back and really look at the season and, you know, what guys improved on and what they didn't. And in that vein, Dylan, today we're going to be talking a little bit later about some pitchers and some arsenal changes that they've made, guys that have added velocity, some guys who have lost velocity or maybe lost shape in certain pitches, kind of covering the whole gamut. But before that, couple of news and notes, players that I wanted to sort of discuss before we got into that, Dylan. But yeah, that's a long minute tirade for me, so I'll kick it over to you. How's it going?
It's good. You were on vacation, so you're all relaxed, and you have to get back into talking again because you were quiet for a week. Things are good. Good. The Jays had a nice win yesterday. I'm getting kind of caught up in the Jays fever, so that's nice. Kind of the home stretch now. Bo Bichette's injured, but the unsung heroes are stepping up as championship teams do. So just like Marco Scudero and Joe Panic of yesteryear, we got Tyler Heineman and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa kind of picking up the pace. So
that was a great moment last night, actually. In that come from behind. It was last night, right? It wasn't
Monday. Yeah. It was last night. Today I'm sorry, we're recording Wednesday
together at this point. Yeah.
The great play of it, not to belabor this whole Jays thing, is that the Vlad play in the 10th, Altuve on second base as the ghost runner, and the ball was hit to first base on the ground to Vlad, and he threw across the diamond to Barger playing third, and it's not a force. They have to tag him out, and they tagged out Altuve. Like, super gutsy play, and it paid off, got him out. Everyone got all hepped up. And then I think I heard a stat today from Dan Shulman that in 2 years, no one has ever tried that play. No one's attempted to throw across the diamond from first base to get the lead runner at third on a tag out. So
yeah,
it was a risky play, but, Vlad likes to take risks. And paid off. So that was good. It was a very, very fun game to watch.
Yeah. It's fun. You know, the Jays have been fun this year. Things are coming together. It's a really fun stretch run in, you know, a couple of these divisions, particularly the American League East. You know, there are a ton of good teams there. Obviously, the AL West, there's, you know, three teams bunched up there. That's an exciting race as well. And then of course the NL West, which might be the best division in baseball outside the Rockies. The way the Giants have come back of late, and then, you know, hot stretch over the last 3 weeks or so, the Dodgers obviously kind of coming down to earth and having that East Coast trip that was just dreadful. The Padres, you know, stay nipping on their heels. It's really interesting how all these different races are going. And it's one of these like sort of situations where, depending on how things shake out over the next couple of weeks, the teams that are in third, you know, wild card teams could be winning divisions and getting byes. And, you know, it's all pretty close outside of, you know, I guess you could say the Tigers and the Brewers, right? Like, those are really the only teams that are kind of cakewalking right now in their division. So this is kind of what they wanted with the expanded playoff format, more teams in the mix. And, you know, there's very clearly, you know, a handful of teams that, you know, on the outside that potentially could be in the playoffs. But more so than that, I think it's really the jostling of positions among those prime playoff teams. And then, you know, whoever kind of sneaks in and is in that sixth spot when the season ends, when the music stops. So it's really interesting. But I wanted to get into Conley early in his debut, because I think what the Red Sox are doing right now is obviously impacting their chances, and I think potentially increasing their chances, you know, of a pretty good playoff run of bringing up all these different left-handers. You know, Tolley really great in his debut. It's been a mixed bag since. They call up Conley early. He's had quite a bit of success in his first start. 11 Ks. It was the most Ks he's ever had in college or as a professional. Just an outstanding start against a pretty good lineup in the Athletics, who are kind of looking at, like, you know, WRC plus and WOBA and that sort of thing, I think rank like 9th, 10th, 11th in terms of home run production. So, and that run production at home, I should say, as opposed to home run production, but they're pretty high up there too. They're kind of a middle of the pack offense, maybe like a top 10. Dylan's dog agrees with me.
He does. He's excited.
It's been a while since we've had a dog on a podcast here at BA, but we have a long tradition of this, Dylan. So it's perfectly fine. This might be the first Canadian dog that we've ever had on though. So, cheers to you, sir. I'm excited about early. It was a great performance. We saw the quality of the changeup. He held the velocity that he gained this year kind of deeper into starts. Was holding it into the fifth inning last night, 93, 94. I think almost, you know, reached a 95 in the last inning. The quality of the secondaries, the diversity of the secondaries, we talk about this a lot more, I feel like, now when we talk about pitchers, is having that diversity within the arsenal. Not everybody has 270s, like, you know, or 80s like Spencer Strider or whatever grade you want to put out, but, you know, plus to, you know, elite pitch. There aren't a lot of guys that have that, right? So even Paul Skeens has proven that having that diversity in his arsenal took him to another level and allowed him to have this great success that he's had as a professional. And I think we're seeing that more and more. Early has that. He's got three different breaking ball shapes. He's got a changeup that's really good, but on top of it, and I'm going to go and look at some of the data I haven't today, but at times he'll manipulate that, make it look a little bit more like a splitter. And then other times it almost looks a little more like a kick change. So he really has feel for his arsenal and kind of that pitchability component, plus sort of the deception that I think all adds up. So, you know, he had some success, and I think the greater point I wanted to talk about, I know I mentioned this to you, fair, but it's when looking at some of these deeper leagues that you're in and you're in the stretch run, I'm in a few leagues where, you know, 30 team leagues where, you know, we have sort of a playoff structure and it goes from a roto league all throughout the season to like head to head over the last few weeks to crown an actual winner. I know it's madness, but we enjoy it. And I wish I had some of that starting depth, because I feel like in deeper leagues, the depth of starting pitching, it's really hard to find it on the waiver wire. It's hard to acquire it in trades. It costs a lot. Your best bet is kind of building this stash of, you know, if you in your minor spots of higher minors pitchers or higher upside college guys that are, you know, are drafted, because they can all move pretty fast. I think they're still good bets. Like maybe Treya Savage doesn't get called up this year, but Peyton Tolley does. But you can kind of load yourself up with those guys and know that within a year or two, or even that same year, they could be called up. And I think going after guys that are starting the year in AA and AAA and just building up as many of those starters as possible in deeper leagues is super valuable. You're in a 12-team league where you can go and pick up a lot of these guys. There's starting pitchers available. You know, that's a different story, right? But I think when you're in deeper leagues where you have some of that flexibility to call guys up between your minors and back and forth, it's always valuable to have a few of these guys, especially as you get into the last month of the season. And like I told you, with one team that, you know, finished first in my league and was really good, it's bruised and battered going into the playoffs, man. And I have like three healthy starters left. And I think I started the season with like 14 guys that would pitch in the major leagues in a starting capacity on my roster in some way, shape, or form. So I even had some of those prospect starters. I wish I had even more. I just think it's a way to kind of stretch your bench, add some depth, you know, compile innings pitched, and to a lesser extent with hitters, I think plate appearances as well, which at the end of the day is kind of the name of the game in fantasy, especially with roto or even head to head, right? Like, you know, the more at bats, the more innings pitched, especially if they're of quality, the better you're doing.
Yeah, I think you're onto something. You talked about it a couple weeks ago, how like AAA is like might even be harder for pitchers because like the strike zone, the ABS, all that stuff is like really tough. And so they're coming into the major leagues and they're doing quite well. And like this year, the Robo Scout like success rate on AAA pitchers was like so good. Not to pat myself on the back, but it was just like, obviously there's the Tongs and the Chase Burnses and then like the guys you expect are good, are going to be good, but it's like the Jacob Lopez, like Ian Seymour, like these guys were not like highly regarded prospects. Like they're not the cream of the crop that you're hearing about all the time. Troy Melton. These are guys who are probably were available. Brandon Walter. I keep just coming up with names as I think of them that were probably widely available in your leagues, started doing well in AAA, the upper levels. And then they came into the majors and actually had a lot of success. So I think you're onto something. You can get these guys super cheap. I got Troy Melton for cheap. Jacob Lopez I've had on my team. He's injured now, but he was doing well. Cam Schlittler, he was getting a bit of buzz, so maybe he doesn't really fall into that role. But like he wasn't a top 100. He wasn't really a top 200 coming into the year at all. But, you know, once he started performing, you could pick him up. And so I'm kind of like James Anderson talks about it a lot, how he doesn't like the lower level pitchers. He doesn't want to invest in them at all. Obviously, this is not like his theory, but he really adheres to it. And like he's totally onto something there, because there's always upper level guys who just pop up and just become great. Like Spencer Schwellenbach last year, just kind of like out of the blue in quotes and just became a huge dynasty asset, like immediately almost. So I think that's a really good strategy. Not to kind of advertise for RoboScout, but I think like just looking at the upper level rankings of RoboScout throughout the year, I think you'll go a long way in doing well in your dynasty leagues for cheap.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you're adding lower level pitchers, you know, most of the time it's kind of like what is left that's not, you know, crap on your waiver wire. Like in a deeper league, like sometimes you're adding Caden Scarborough because you're like, hey, this guy is a lot more upside than, you know, whoever this backup infielder is, or like, you know, potentially, or like, you know, like a guy who's going to end up in a relief situation or whatever. Like, yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a lot of wisdom in that, for sure. But I don't know how frequently, like, I don't know. I mean, like, I think people went crazy over like Esteban Mejia and some of those guys, right? But at the same time, like sometimes those guys turn out to be like Yuri Perez. Like, yeah. So, you know, it's a dangerous game, but I do think that the odds are probably in your favor. I don't have a problem adding those guys. I just always try to include them in trades. and like when the hype machine is high on those guys, like if you have Kevin DeFrank right now, like the hype machine is high and I'm like not totally sold that any of those like DSL pitchers, the stuff is great. Awesome. There's a long road, especially for pitchers, right? Like with hitters, I think it's a little different because as we saw, like those guys like Mate can be in Double A by the end of the next season, right? Like it could be in the majors in like 2 years. Like that's not going to happen with a DSL pitcher. Like even it's just like, you know, Yuri would be like, it's like the rare exception, but like more often than not, you're going to go through like a rough patch with those guys when they first come over. And I feel like trading some of those complex standouts like early, you don't necessarily regret, because you're probably going to be able to add them again when they get dropped after their first Tommy John surgery or something and someone can't keep them. You know, like you could have traded Juan Valera a year ago and then like added him back. Like there's, I don't know. Yeah. Like I think going into next year though, like a guy like Gage Stanifer, I think is super interesting and probably isn't going to be, you know, crazy expensive. Like I'll go through some of these names, like David Hageman, who's in high A, will probably start next year in Double A. We'll see how he does in AFL, but like he's a name that's probably not going to be super expensive, but could be a guy like a year from now where like, hey, David Hageman's like making starts for the Diamondbacks, you know, like all of those names are definitely possible. I think going into the offseason, the high A guys are almost worth chasing, especially if they had a decent sample at high A, because they're probably going to be Double A assignees or up within a month if they shove, right? Because totally fell into that category of like a high A guy. And I do think that pitchers for the most part move pretty fast through AAA now. Like if they have success there and if there's an opportunity to move that guy up and he's not many years away from his Rule 5 date, more often than not, those guys do get called up because there's just so many pitching injuries, and not even long-term ones, right? But like just guys going down on, you know, 15 to 20 days of rest after, you know, a minor tweak or something like that. So I think like you need so many starters if you're a major league team that all those guys are in play, right? We didn't come into the season thinking that Jonah Tong was going to be starting for the Mets for a month at the end of the season, right? Like, but you could have looked at him and said, it's a double A starter. And the chances and opportunities that that guy is going to get that opportunity are a lot better than, you know, even taking like an A ball hitter, I think a lot of the time, you know, especially as you get deeper into these drafts, right?
I totally agree. I mean, I think for DCs, for example, like I'm really like my most successful DC this year is the one that we drafted like kind of right after the season ended. So it's like November. So one of the early ones where before like ADP is settled, before like the prospect lists have come out, before the, I think even Steamer had like updated their projections yet. But you know, if you kind of have your finger on the pulse of the prospects, you could get like Nick Kurtz and these guys cheap, Matt Shaw, even Cam Smith. And so like, I'm really going to like in the last couple of weeks of the season, really dig into the upper level pitchers and hitters who I think may make huge contributions, to DC. So definitely a tactic to use here.
Absolutely. A couple of guys I wanted to shout out. We can go through some of these pretty quickly right now. Just want to shout out Dax Kilby. We had him pretty high in the FYPD list. If you remember, I had him shoved up pretty high. I think it might look low now in comparison to anybody who like updated their FYPD list in like the last week and a half. But showing a lot of traits, like the angles aren't quite there yet. It's not like a picturesque swing. But I think the traits and attributes and athleticism and all that stuff that I really liked has already begun to show. And there's pretty good plate skills. Like if I'm not mistaken, I'll have to double check, but like his walk rate's higher than his strikeout rate, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to have to pull that up. But
it is. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Like everything was really clicking in a full season level. And it's just rare that you see that with a high school player out of the draft. Yeah, the upside is immense. So that's a guy that like we were high on, but at this point, when we redo the FYPD, we have to move him up a couple more spots. But yeah, I think, you know, a clear first rounder and a clear upside guy, and kind of depending on, you know, where you're drafting in your league. Like if you're after pick 12 or 13, so like the good college starters are gone and some of those like couple of college bats that might move quick and the top high school guys, like, I think Kilby's not a bad bet. You may end up looking like a genius, you know, taking him at 12 or 13 or something. Couple other ones, some White Sox related news and notes here. Noah Schultz and Braden Montgomery, both done for the season. Montgomery could actually return in AFL. They said he got a fractured foot after dealing with the ankle injury, obviously that took him out of his college season. He's starting to become a little injury prone. And it's funny because it's all lower, like half like fractures and injuries that I think are kind of this like freak stuff. But it is kind of like, there's some irony in the fact that he stopped pitching and playing two way and now has been injured more consistently as a position player. But, you know, I think it's just bad luck. And these are the kind of things that could go away quickly. Schultz, on the other hand, I kind of spent my vacation kind of digging in on some pitching prospects, and like watching all their film and like kind of getting my own personal thoughts together on them. And Schultz is a weird one. It's like he's got this cutter, but he needs like another pitch. And it's like he has like no extension. There's not a lot of deception despite this like long arm action. And I just kind of feel like, you know, where the ball is coming every single time, because every pitch he throws kind of hooks in. But for whatever reason, it almost feels like the movement is almost like so early that hitters are picking up on it. Like, it's not late break. It almost feels like early break. I feel like his velocity's down a little bit too. He's going deeper into starts. That's the one thing. He was like a three inning hero for years. Right. So part of it is like, I think he's learning to pitch, might have been dealing with some nicks and bruises and bumps that just come with a lot more innings and a lot more pitches on a per appearance basis than anything he had ever done in his life prior to that. But like watching the tape, like it just wasn't like the weird, nasty funk where you're like, oh man, like that's nasty stuff. Like you'll see it every so often, but it wasn't that consistent and it was just really hittable, you know? And I think the defense behind him didn't do a lot of favors. I will say that to his credit. Like, I think like his infield was pretty bad. There was a lot of like dinks and dunks and on a lot of hits, but then eventually like guys just start teeing off on it. Like, it's not like he avoided barrels. And, you know, I kind of broke down the numbers and it was like, you know, he was just getting like demolished on some of his secondary pitches and his sinker. Like, the numbers just weren't good. So, you know, back to the drawing board for him. He's an upper minors guy that I don't think I would bet on next year. Like, that scares me a little bit. And I feel like the acquisition cost is probably going to be really high. I mean, like, if someone gives up on him and you can add him in even a shallower league, like, yeah, I think I probably would like take the chance that he returns to form if he's like filling my last prospect spot, you know? But yeah, other one I wanted to call out was Liam Doyle, made his debut. Stuff looked pretty good. He's now been promoted to double A because, low A Palm Beach season is over. High A Peoria season is over. So he's going to double A. That's probably the level that I would assume he's probably going to begin the season at next year. He'll probably return to double A Springfield. Kind of an advanced SEC guy. There's nothing he should be proving in, you know, A ball. Liam Doyle is a guy that could potentially be up next year, especially if he performs at the level we think he's going to perform in the environments like Springfield and Memphis, which are notoriously good hitting parks and leagues. You know, I think, and then of course, get passing like the AAA sniff test, which we talked about. That will be interesting. You know, there might be, you know, a little more growing pains in terms of adding secondaries, but the profile's not that different from Peyton Tolley in terms of like unique fastball traits with velocity from a lefty who has good enough secondaries to throw them, but needs to sharpen those and improve them. So, you know, I think he could get some major league starts next year. I don't think that's out of the question. I don't know if you've dug in or looked at any of the Doyle stuff from the initial start.
Not since his college data, but I think anyone who's finishing the year in double A is pretty much not guaranteed, but going to be up in the majors as long as they're good, because they'll start in double A and then like April, May, if they're performing, if they're doing what we expect Liam Doyle or like Jesus Made is going to do, they're going to get promoted to AAA. And then, you know, after a month or two, it's going to be clamoring to get them up. So like just a slow development pace. They're going to be up in the like final third, like August, September, assuming no injuries, assuming no like terrible performance. And then in some cases, they may be up way earlier. So I think, yeah, Liam Doyle is almost guaranteed to be up. Yeah, anyone, like I said, anyone who kind of finishes in double A is probably going to be playing in the major leagues next year, barring unforeseen tragedy.
I suppose that's possible. All right, well, we're going to dive into the second half of the show in a minute. We're going to take a quick break.
FT fam, let's talk about Fair Harbor. And if you're listening, I hope that you watch this conversation at some point, because we're doing show and tell, Kratz. Shorts, they can be used as a bathing suit. And the liner, which we call butter, is the game breaker. It's the playmaker, because it's different.
You've worn shorts that are not like this, and the liner sucks. They are buttery on your butt.
I just came up with something for them. Your liner sucks. Get Fair Harbor liner. Seriously. Give it a shot. I'm not just saying this. the butter analogy plays. And FT fam, you know we're hooking you up. FairHarborClothing.com/Val, 20% off when you use the code Val on your first purchase. Once again, that's Fair, H-A-R-B-O-R, clothing.com/FOUL for 20% off your first purchase and use promo code FOUL.
All right, and we are back. Jeff Ponce, Dylan White, Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. We are talking about some pitchers now that changed some arsenals. We're going to start with a couple of Marlins off the top, Dylan. Talk to me about Robbie Snelling and Thomas White. I would say two ascending pitching prospect values at the moment in real life as well as in fantasy, right? I mean, both these guys could debut next year and look like big dogs.
I mean, both these guys may debut this year. They're all both in AAA. I mean, Robbie Snelling was kind of mediocre last year. He wasn't really popping on RoboScout at all. This year, he kind of took a step forward. He's one of the top AAA pitchers or pitchers in general, RoboScout. And if you look at the arsenal, you can kind of see why. Basically, all of his pitches have gained velocity and gained stuff. Last year, he sat 92, touched 96. This year, he sits 94 and has touched 98. So that's a gain of 2 miles an hour. His slider was 80 miles an hour. And now it's 84, so that's 4 miles an hour. The changeup is faster as well, kind of pacing with the increase in velocity in the four seam. And then his curveball, which was 79 miles an hour, is now 82 miles an hour. So just velocity wise, strength wise, he's gained there. The curveball used to have 5 inches of horizontal break and now has 10 inches of horizontal break. The spin rate has gone up from 2300 to 2500 RPM. Like, he's just basically, long story short, has just drastically improved his arsenal across the board. It's not just like he's found velo on one pitch or he now gets, you know, good break on the slider now. It's like across the board, he's increased strength and improved his stuff. So a huge win for the Marlins there. Robbie Snelling in AAA, like on the cusp of debuting, probably one of the guys I'll be targeting next year. In DC, it's just because he's probably not going to be as expensive as like the Tollies and the Tongs and the Nolan McClains and the Chase Burnses for sure. He's definitely not going to be, but you know, he could come up pretty early in the season and be pretty dominant. Thomas White, kind of basically the same story. He's had the pedigree right from the draft. He's been so young, so. You know, there was kind of a long way, but this year he's just really improved his arsenal across the board as well. Pretty much the same story as Robbie Snelling. Every pitch has gone up in velocity. The slider's gone up from 82 miles an hour to 86 miles an hour now. It doesn't have as much sweep. It's kind of like a tight bullet slider where the IVB is up and there's not as much sweep, but you know, he's got 12% more whiffs on it and 12% more chases on it as well. It's just pretty much Thomas White has increased and kind of met the pedigree that everyone was talking about, how he could be, you know, an ace of a staff pretty much. And he's so young and now he's in AAA and all the arsenal improvements kind of support all that.
Yeah, 100%. So those are names you're going to be targeting then, Dylan, is what you're saying.
I think I'm leaning more Snelling, like in redraft for 2026, I'm leaning more Snelling than White. Mm-hmm. Just cause I think they're going to bring him up earlier than White. Cause yeah. He's,
I think you break camp. 100%.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's very much possible. And maybe White, they want to kind of like baby a bit cause he's a bit younger, kind of slow play him a bit more. So, but definitely those are guys that are going to be in the majors next year.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if this guy will be in the majors next year, but he is on a team and in an organization where he could move quickly if things keep progressing this way. But Christian Opper, know what your thoughts are on Christian Opper. I know you called him out as a guy that obviously the performance has been way up this year. We wrote about that early in the season, but the stuff changes have held as well. So what's your take there?
Yeah, his stuff across the board has improved year over year. Basically a four seam changeup slider guy. his four seam was 92 touching 98. This year it's 95 touching 100. So like, that's pretty significant. I think he's in high A now. The extension has gone up as well. So not only does he have velocity, but he has like effective velocity has improved. His extension last year was like 5.2 and now it's 5.6 feet. So he's really kind of like that fastball is now kind of a weapon, whereas it wasn't as much in the past. The slider, the stuff has improved. It was 79 miles an hour. It's now 80 miles an hour. So it hasn't really gone up that much, but the horizontal break has drastically moved from 5 inches to 12 inches. So huge horizontal break. A lot of that's the spin rate is up 151 RPM. So he was 2250. Now he's at 2400. So that's a pretty fairly high spin slider. So yeah, he's got three pitches, four seam, got the change up to get the same side or the opposite side batters, and then like the slider to get non-platoon advantage batters. I don't know how you describe it from a pitcher point of view. But yeah, huge stuff on the White Sox. He's actually quite performed well. I've talked about him on the RoboScout articles the last couple of weeks because he's actually performing well in the last month as well.
Yeah, and I think in an organization like this, he obviously could move pretty fast. And they've relied on a lot of homegrown pitching as well over the last couple of years. So we'll be, you know, sort of interesting to see how he progresses. But it's certainly like interesting changes and the jump and stuff, et cetera, you know, all matters quite a bit. Next guy I want to talk about with you is J.R. Richey. I know he talked to me a little bit about some of the mechanical changes of just, you know, trying to get behind the ball and sort of get downhill a little bit more, lower arm slots, some of those things that him and the Braves had worked on this offseason. And doing some of your research, you actually found some of these changes.
Yeah, he across the board. So I think 2023, he was popping early on RoboScout and then he went down with Tommy John. And I think he basically missed all of last year, if I'm not mistaken, or pitched not that much last year. So when you come back from Tommy John, you always kind of see like that velocity bump. Probably a lot of it is you kind of lost velocity at the end of the year. You're also, you're training and you're working on the muscles during your rehab. But he is across the board again, just like Robbie Snelling, like we talked about there, across the board, he's added velocity. He was 92. He's now 93 and a half. The flatness on that fastball as well is he's gotten flatter. It was minus 4.5 degrees, which is already quite flat. And now it's minus 4.2. He's coming in from a lower release height too. So that's probably contributing and he's added extension. So it's kind of the same story that we're talking about where not only you're adding velocity, but you're adding extension so that the effective velocity that the batters are seeing, it's like even more. So he was always kind of a RoboScout darling. Now that he looks like he's healthy, I'm sure he's going to be popping next year. So another pitcher in the Braves organization with like extension and flatness, especially flatness, like Didier Fuentes and these guys, Strider, obviously. So I think maybe the league is catching on to the flatness thing and these kind of outlier guys, low release height, flatness. I mean, this is not something that we're just talking about now. We've been talking about this for years, but you know, they have a type and J.R. Richey seems to be that type. Owen Murphy, another guy, same thing.
Yeah. And those are the good names. Those are all the good names. Those are the players that we're going to talk about with positive light. Now we're going to talk about some negative stuff. Some guys where stuff backed up, velocity's down. Unfortunately, we're going to talk about personal favorite of mine for a long time because he's just fun. Tink Hentz of the Cardinals. And this feels like it has been a roller coaster ride for the last 3 years with Tink. And, you know, it's kind of materialized in, you know, deteriorating stuff. So, you know, what are your thoughts on Hentz?
Yeah, I mean, the sample size this year isn't as high, but it's kind of the opposite story of what we're talking about with Snelling and Richey and Thomas White. His velocity on all his pitches has backed up. He was 94 on the four seam. It's now 92. He was pretty flat at minus 4.7. It's now minus 4.9, so less flat. The IVB dropped from 16 and a half inches to 15 inches. The extension has even dropped. It was 6.1 and now it's 5.7. And 5.7 is actually, you know, below average extension. So that's the fastball. And then like the slider, the breaking pitches, same thing. They've kind of backed up as well. And yeah, it's just kind of disappointing because he was always a guy on RoboScout that was popping because he was younger for the level. Always, although he was going in kind of the short starts, like three innings and out, kind of like you were talking about with Noah Schultz. He was performing during those times. So it's like, we wanted to get some length. We wanted to, you know, him to pitch in upper levels. And now it's kind of, the stuff seems to be backing up. So it's a bit of a sad story. He was actually dropped in my 15 team dynasty league and was not picked up for like 2 weeks. He got picked up last week, but And I was tempted to grab him, and like, you know, I'm not really regretting it right now for all the reasons we're talking about, where you can always find some new guy in the upper levels. But yeah, kind of a sad story for Tank Ends right now. But yeah, everything could change in 2026 because he's got the pedigree and he's got the arsenal still. It's, although it's taken a step back, it's still a pretty solid arsenal.
Yeah, I for one agree with that and hope that he does come back to form. But you do have to worry just with the lack of physicality, because he is a more slight guy. It's not even height. He's just not very big. That, you know, maybe he just can't handle the rigors of consistent starting pitching and holding his stuff all the time. I think the relief risk is very real on him. And I tend to be somebody who poo-poos relief risk on more pitching prospects than most people do. Another guy who has no relief risk, because he's never really thrown enough hard enough to be a reliever. But Jaden Hamm was a name that, you know, I liked sort of coming out of spring training in 2024. He had a pretty good season. The stuff was down in spring training, and it seems like it's kind of held check in that vein throughout the season. So what are your thoughts on Jaden Hamm? I should probably see him next week when I go out to see the Altoona Erie series.
Yeah, I think I had him as a breakout in 2024 as well. Had him on a couple teams, but yeah, this year the stuff has stepped back. It's basically 2 miles an hour down across the board. He was 92. He's now sitting like 92 and a half. He's now sitting like 90.6. The slider stepped back a bit, but the curveball's down 2 miles an hour. The changeup's down 2 miles an hour. He comes in over the top. Like, his release height is high. So his IVB still stays high. It's still 20 inches and looks good, but like, because he's coming in from the top, like the flatness isn't really there. So
yeah, I mean, the expected hurt is a little higher too, right? Like, yeah, than it would be with a lower slot.
Exactly. So I mean, 2 miles an hour is pretty significant, and like, now sitting 91, like, you want to be not you want to be, but like 95 miles an hour is the average fastball now in the major. So he's got a ways to go. He's got to bounce back to where he was and then also build on that. So I'm a bit worried about Jaden Hamm, and the Tigers have a lot of good arms right now. So he's going to kind of be buried, and maybe he'll be a reliever because of that kind of that unique arm slot he has. But yeah, I'm a bit leery of Jaden Hamm's prospects as a starting pitcher.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll see. Maybe he's not like a super athlete either. So it's not like he's going to come back like super physical, moving different. Like, that's kind of a concern, right? So, yeah, we'll see what happens with Hamm, and, you know, maybe he can get back to sort of having that elite command of his stuff and getting all the results that, you know, he was getting previously. Other guy I wanted to call out here, Angels pitching prospect, Sam Aldegiri, obviously acquired at the deadline last year from the Phillies. What are your thoughts on Aldegiri? Because he's another guy whose stuff has been down this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of the same sad story as with Hamm. So with Aldegiri, his stuff was never incredible. It was more performance versus stuff. And then when the Phillies traded him to the Angels, and the Angels, as they do, you know, put him in the majors, not that successful. So the stuff was already mediocre. It's down again. He's kind of below 100s. On our stuff plus model, he was 92 miles an hour. He's now 90.6. So that step back, he topped out at 96 miles an hour last year. He's now down 94. The IVB's down. The flatness is way worse. He was at -5, which was pretty good, and now he's at -5.5. So assuming he's not really changing drastically, like the locations, that's pretty significant. The slider's down 2 miles an hour. It was 84. Saris talks about 85 miles an hour kind of being like the magic velocity one on sliders. He was basically there at 84. Now he's down to 82. So it just looks like the stuff has stepped back. It was never kind of there to begin with. So I'm worried being in the Angels. I don't know how much development's going to happen. He may be pitching in the majors, but whether or not he deserves to be based on his underlying stuff and his performance remains to be seen. But yeah, Aldejerry's kind of a name where I'm a bit disappointed in that I was hoping he would take a step forward. I don't like the Angels kind of being besmirched as a team that just accelerates their players through the system without any development. I wanted to see some progress because we have seen some and some of their pitching and stuff, and I like kind of their draft. They're picking stuff, guys like Chris Cortez and Ryan Johnson, guys like that like have interesting traits. This one looks a bit disappointing, so I'm not gonna have Aldejerry, even though he pitched in the majors. I'm not gonna have him on any DCs next year, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good plan, especially like any of the Angels guys. I generally get like a little wary of those guys. For example, like I'm probably going to stay away from Tyler Bremner. He ended up somewhere else. I might have been in on Bremner. Probably going to stay away. You know, the short path to the major leagues is not necessarily a good thing for your ratios. So I'm going to back off from some of those guys, even if I know they kind of fit into the category that we talked about at the top of the show. Here at the end of the show, I'm still going to say the exception is Angels. They get the asterisk on them in this conversation, at least for me. Maybe it's different for Dylan. Dylan, we've got 40 full minutes here. We've talked about a lot of stuff, particularly pertaining to how to target and what pitching prospects are on the upswing, which might be who to target. Really good discussion. Always glad to have you on again. We'll be back next week. For Jeff, for Dylan, thanks for tuning in.